17, distinguish among the components of internal validity, the types of variables associated with each, and how we provide evidence for each. There's two components of internal validity, initial equivalence and ongoing equivalence. Initial equivalence is all about subject variables, and the way that we demonstrate that we have it is by demonstrating or describing in the participant part of the method section that we engaged in proper random assignment of individuals by the researcher before manipulation of the IV. The other part of internal validity is ongoing equivalence, which refers to procedural variables. There are two approaches to demonstrating that we've got ongoing equivalence confound. The first is random assignment of procedural alternatives, which means if we've got a couple different labs that we might collect data in, we randomly assign who is in what condition for initial equivalence, but then who is running what lab for ongoing equivalence. If we don't have alternatives in mind on purpose that we plan and randomly assign to, then all the rest of ongoing equivalence is controlled by what's just known as procedural standardization. Essentially, holding constant. Everybody gets treated exactly the same except for the IV per se. The parenthetical part, and remember, the parenthetical part won't appear on the exam with the essay question, you have to remember. Keep in mind that maintaining ongoing equivalence is harder the longer the study runs. Even if it's something as simple as we run them for 100 trials, we send them home for the evening, bring them back the next morning and run another 100 trials, Lord only knows what happened during that evening and what consequence it might have. So, and if you're running, we've done some things where we're evaluating workshops for people, and you know which workshop works better and things like that. When I run those studies, I don't even let them walk out the door for lunch. Lunch is brought in. The conversation during lunch is essentially controlled. We're entertaining them during lunch. We're keeping their mouths full and busy. We're cutting down on the amount of interaction. We're controlling every moment from when we assign them until we pat them on the butt on the way out the door. Okay? Maintaining that over a one-day seminar is extremely difficult. If you're going to a two-day seminar and they're going to go out and drink that evening, control gets really difficult. How do you make sure that they don't trade back and forth and discover what the different manipulations are, what the different treatments are? We're sometimes running 6-8 different manipulations, and the manipulations are not particularly subtle. If somebody says, we had a speaker, really? We were watching a tape. Okay? They're going to notice. And as soon as they notice, they have hypotheses. And as soon as they have hypotheses, they have to decide if they're going to play along or work against. Okay? So ongoing control pretty much boils down to random assignment of alternatives and holding everything else procedurally constant. The longer the study, the harder it is to get the constancy in the procedures. If you want to, you can also talk about, we mentioned the difficulty of maintaining ongoing equivalence in the field is often tougher than in the lab. Because in the field, you're in somebody else's backyard. And they probably are in control. And so holding things constant can be difficult. Suddenly, the 1/4 grade class has to go to art 10 minutes early, and so they don't get the full induction. The other group got 30 minutes, this group gets 20 because they're out doing art or recess or something else. And typically the principal will not let you lock the door until the clock is up. Okay, so longer term field studies, harder to maintain ongoing equivalence. It's possible, but it's just money and experience. Typically money.